Welcome back to Four Winds Fellowships. This is episode number 9 in our series on Pristine Apostolic Monotheism. That is the theology of God and His Son that was taught by the apostles and was communicated by the next generation after the apostles as well. Now, last time we talked about John chapter 1, verse 14. Today I want to focus on verse 15. I know I said in the previous video that I was going to look at 15 through 18 in the next video, but there's so much in 15 that it was going to be too long, so I decided to break it up. So we're going to focus just on verse 15 today. Now you may see on your screen there that it says verse 15 is right here. John testifies concerning him and has exclaimed, saying, "This was the one whom I said, quote, 'The one coming after me has outranked me because he was before me.'" What I want to do is I want to put this kind of in context. And why is the Apostle John, who is writing this prologue and he's quoting John the Baptist, why is he quoting John the Baptist? Why does he bring John the Baptist into the equation here? And what's important to notice is that he mentioned John the Baptist as a witness all the way back here in verse 6, beginning of verse 6. He mentions John the Baptist, and he specifically says that he's bringing John the Baptist forward as for a witness here, a witness. Now, the question is, as a witness of what? What was the Apostle John bringing quotations from John the Baptist? What was his purpose, and what was he doing this so that John the Baptist is essentially testifying to something regarding, you know, John's purposes here in this prologue? So I thought what I would do is let's look at verses 1 through 9, which I have up here, where he mentions John the Baptist, and I want to show you why he is mentioning John the Baptist at this point in the dialogue. And then later, all the way down in verse 15, he actually quotes John the Baptist and what John the Baptist said. All right. So first he says he's calling him as a witness to bear witness of something that he has already said. And then he actually quotes him down here. So let's look at this in context. All right. So we're going to read verses 1 through 6. "In the beginning was Logos, and Logos was with God, and Logos was God. This one was in the beginning with God. Everything originated through him, and without him nothing originated. What has originated in him was life," that is, in Logos, life originated in Logos. "And the life," this is Logos, the living Logos, "was the light of men." And this is important that we notice that this living life, who is Logos, was the light of men. "And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not take hold of it." Period. Now, beginning of verse 6, John is calling John the Baptist to bear witness to what he has just said in verses 1 through 5. All right, that's the important point. That's why this appears here in the dialogue. So what are the points that John has made so far in his prologue here, right? The first point is that Logos was in the beginning, that Logos was with God, that is, in the presence of God, but external to God, and that's really important. And Logos was God. The word God is always a personal noun. It always refers to a being, a person. So Logos was being called by God's title, but he's not God himself. All right, that's what this requires. And he repeats this statement about being with God. He said, "This one was in the beginning with God," repeating this. So he's stressing that. All right, he's stressing the fact that he is external to God. Logos is external to God. It's not a thought in God's mind. Logos is with God, in the presence of God, not in God's head. All right. Then he says, what has originated in him was life. Life was the light of men, and the light, this is Logos, who is now the light, shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not take hold of it. Now, what is meant by this statement? It's talking about Logos interaction and bringing the light or the revelation of God into the world previously, and it not that the darkness did not take hold of it. And this is a reference to wisdom, which we're going to talk about later, so I don't want to get too much into that. Wisdom is also a person in the Old Testament who brings this light into the world as well. All right, so we'll skip that for now. Now he says in verse 6, a man originated having been commissioned from beside God. The name given to him was John. This one arrived for a witness so that he should testify concerning, notice, the light. It doesn't say concerning Jesus. It says concerning the light. And what is, or who is the light? The light is Logos. All right, that's critically important. So John the Baptist came for a witness to testify concerning Christ, who is Logos, so that all may believe through him. He was not the light, that is, John the Baptist was not the light, but came so that he should testify concerning the light. He was the true light, which coming into the world enlightens every man. Now that is referring, of course, to the Son, to Christ. All right. Now, when we get down to verse 15, the apostle says this. He says, and this is right after verse 14, which talks about the word Logos becoming flesh and dwelling among us, and we beheld his glory, glory as of the only begotten from the Father. We talked about that last time. And so now he begins to actually quote John the Baptist. He didn't quote John the Baptist up here. He's just saying John the Baptist came to validate and verify these things that I have said up here. All right? And this all has to do with Christ's pre-existence as Logos. So John the Baptist came to bear witness to and testify concerning the light, who is Logos, and to bear witness to these facts that John the Apostle has told us about Logos. All right? So how does John do that? So now he begins to quote, after he says that Logos became flesh and dwelt among us, now he begins to quote John the Baptist in order to validate what he had set up here. All right? So what does he say? He said, John testifies concerning him and has exclaimed, saying, and now he quotes John the Baptist, this was the one whom I said, the one coming after me has outranked me because he was before me, or literally he existed before me. It could be translated that way as well. Now, I'd want to point out to you a couple of things here. First of all, I want to point out the verbs and the tenses of the verbs, because these are absolutely critical to translating this verse correctly. All right. So where it says here, has outranked me, literally means ahead of me, has become. Now, this verb, has become, is the perfect tense form of ginome, the verb we were talking about in the previous episode, in episode number 8, where we talked about how that one thing becomes something else, right? And that's what we have here. He has become. This means he has become something he was not previously. That's what the perfect tense requires. All right? But what does the next clause say? He was before me. That's how I have it translated in the LGV. Literally, he was or existed first of me. Now, the word was here, or existed, is the verb eimi, which is the verb of being or existing in Greek. It refers to something existing. Sometimes it's modified by other words. Like, for example, it's the same verb that's used back here where it says, in the beginning was Logos. The word was is exactly the same there as it is here, the imperfect tense of eimi. He was first of me. All right? So in the beginning was logos. Now, it's the verb of being. It means existed. It can be modified by, and it is modified here, by the clause in the beginning. So in other words, logos existed in the beginning. That's essentially what this clause is saying. Okay? Logos existed in the beginning. Now, down here where it says, he was before me, it's the same thing. He existed, and it's being modified. When did he exist? Before me. That is, before John the Baptist. So you can see how the words before me sort of limit or tell us when John is saying that Christ or the Son existed. He's qualifying it by the words before me. And we see the same thing here, that logos was, and that's qualified, or logos existed, qualified by in the beginning. So that's when logos was in this particular statement. All right, you see that? I hope you can see that. That's what the verb means. All right, now what's interesting here, and is really, really important, is the difference between has become and was here, or existed. This is perfect tense. This is imperfect tense. They mean two different things. The perfect tense requires an event to have occurred, and now we're talking about the result of what has occurred. All right, that's what the perfect tense means. And even in English, when we translate it has become, that's the main sense of the perfect tense in English as well, that when we say something has become or has happened, we don't just say something was or something existed. We say something has become. We add the verb has in order to imply a continuous state that is the result of the action that took place. All right, so this is perfect tense of genome. Ahead of me has become. John is saying that Christ has at some point in time moved ahead of John. Now, this word ahead, in its normal usage in the scriptures, it's talking about spatially. Okay, so like, for example, when it talks about someone in Revelation being before the throne of God, it uses this same verb, all right, before the throne. That means in front of the throne of God, as opposed to behind the throne of God. So it's talking spatially, as in position, all right? However, this verb here that's translated first is protos. It's a different verb. Excuse me. Protos means first in sequence, almost always. Now, there are a few rare occasions where it's used to mean first in another way, like perhaps first in order of rank. It's used that way in a few places in the scripture, but they're very few. But the important point is, nowhere else in John's writings does protos ever mean first in rank. It always means first in sequence, and it's used 31 times by John in his gospel, I think once in his first epistle, and then several times in Revelation. Altogether, 31 times John uses this word, protos, in every other occurrence. It means first in sequence, not first in rank. All right, that's an important point. Now, what I have here is Anthony Buzzard's translation of this verse. And Mr. Buzzard does not a very good job of translating this verse. In fact, he is incorrectly translating the verse. This is how he renders it. And of course, he's a biblical Unitarian, and so he is trying his best to keep John from affirming any kind of preexistence for the Son. And so this is how he translates it. The one coming after me has now moved ahead of me. Now, that is actually correct. Has now moved ahead of me. You can see that now moved is essentially the same as has become, right? It's a perfect tense verb. It's describing something that occurred and now a new position. he's ahead of me in a new position. So that would be correct. So I put a little green check mark there. Because, and here's where he twists the scriptures, unfortunately. Because he was always my superior. Now, both of these are wrong. Was always is incorrect. I pointed out that this verb is in the imperfect tense, and it's the imperfect tense form of the verb ame, the verb of be. Was or existed is the correct translation. To say he was always Mr. Buzzard adds the word always. That's not in the text. But by adding the word always, he is undermining the tense of the verb, which is imperfect. So what does the imperfect tense of a verb mean? Well, when a verb isn't in the imperfect tense, it's talking about something that occurred in the past, but it extends over a period of time. That is not just one event or occurrence, but it's extending over a period of time. But the imperfect tense does not reach to the present. It does not refer to something that exists, that existed in the past and still exists up to the present. It does not do that. It stops short of that, which is why here when it says in the beginning was Logos, it's limiting Logos's existence in this context to in the beginning. That is, he's talking about creation week there. All right, so he's only talking about Logos' existence during this specific period of time, and he clarifies that by showing that everything is originating through him, and without him, nothing originated. So he's talking about creation week. So that's why he limits it there. But here, excuse me, when it says he was or existed in the imperfect tense, remember, a period of time in the past that doesn't extend to the present. All right. John is saying he was, that is, he existed a period of time in the past. And he qualifies that by saying first of me or before me sequentially. All right. That's what he's saying. So now this makes perfect sense, because what John is doing here, John the Baptist is doing, is he's talking about rank. Here, he has become ahead of me. That is, he has become superior to me, he's saying. And then he says, because he was before me, or he was, or he existed first of me. Now, this makes absolutely perfectly good sense in a Jewish way of thinking, because in Jewish thinking, rank follows sequence. In other words, like, for example, a firstborn son only ranks higher than his brothers because he came before them. He existed before them. He is superior. He is superior to them because he came first. All right, he was born first. All right, just keep that in mind. Rank follows sequence. That is, you rank above your brothers because you were born before your brothers. Okay, that's the concept that you see in Judaism. Well, John the Baptist is making exactly the same point here. When he says he has become ahead of me, right? Christ has become ahead of John the Baptist in rank. Why? Because he was before me, or he existed before me. John the Baptist is using that principle that we see in Jewish thought, that rank comes from sequence. All right, it's not that a firstborn child doesn't outrank his brothers and sisters just because he's the favorite. He does because he came first. All right, that's the important point. All right, so Mr. Buzzard is wrong here when he says because he was always my superior. What he's doing here is these two expressions, the two verbs here, are clashing with each other by their tense. Okay, how can Christ become his superior when he always was his superior? See, if he's moved ahead of me, that means that Christ has moved ahead or become John's superior at a point in time. And now is John superior? Because he was always my superior? That makes no sense. Not only that, always was, or was literally here, is referring to a condition in the past that doesn't exist anymore. Right? So he was my superior. That condition doesn't exist anymore, but he has now become my superior. And again, the perfect tense of ginomai means he was not that previously. It doesn't make any sense at all the way Mr. Buzzard has it translated here, because the tenses of the verbs are clashing with each other. But also because he's translated the word first, which is protos, Mr. Buzzard has translated that as superior, but that's not the meaning of protos, especially in John. Nowhere else in John, and like I said, he mentions this verb 31 times. Everywhere else, it always means first in sequence, all right, prior to others. All right, now, just to show that that my translation here, the LGV, is the correct translation, you can look at pretty much any other English translation, and you will see that it draws the same distinction. The NASB does a pretty good job of it, although it doesn't really convey the perfect tense of the verb very well here. But I put down here the New Jerusalem Bible, because it actually correctly renders all of the nuances of the grammar, the verb tenses, absolutely accurately, and also it translates the sense of protos accurately, meaning first in sequence. All right, so the New Jerusalem Bible says, "He who comes after me has passed ahead." Again, this is perfect tense, right? It's an event that occurred, and now the condition that results is he's ahead. "Has passed ahead of me because," and again, because is important, "he existed before me." That's correct. All right. Or "he was before me" is okay. But this is actually a little bit clearer there. All right. I hope you get all that. That's the reason John the Baptist is even mentioned up here. It's because the Apostle John is essentially saying that in this statement here in verses 6 through 9, that John the Baptist was a witness to these things that John said about Christ, about Logos, up here. That's why he calls John the Baptist as a witness. Then in verse 15, again, he quotes John the Baptist in his own words in a way that proves preexistence of Christ. So essentially what he's saying here is that John the Baptist, by his own words, validated what I'm telling you up here. Christ existed before John the Baptist. Well, according to the Matthew and Luke, Jesus was born 6 months after John the Baptist. So he can't be talking about his birth from Mary. And that was a well-known fact, that John the Baptist was older in age than Jesus was as a man. But Jesus existed before John the Baptist, and for that reason, he outranks John the Baptist. And that's why the word "because" there is right here is so important. Okay, I hope you guys got all that. This is why Mr. Buzzard's translation is incorrect. I think it's intentionally incorrect. He probably thinks it's correct, but it's not correct. All right, it's absolutely wrong, and that's a dangerous thing when you start changing God's words. All right. Anyway, God bless. We'll see you next time.